So imagine you're building a fleet of a million high-performance Ferraris, right?
Okay, I'm with you.
You've got the factories running 24/7. The demand is just absolutely through the roof. And right as that first massive wave of cars starts rolling off the assembly line, you realize the world only has exactly 2 weeks of engine coolant left.
Which is, that's a terrifying thought if you're the one building them.
Exactly. And that scenario is, well, it's essentially what is happening to the global artificial intelligence industry right now. So welcome to the deep dive. We've got a fascinating stack of notes for you
Yeah, I
today.
really do.
Yeah, we're extracting the most critical insights from the Atomic News, Tech AI Daily Brief, specifically from March 14th, 2026.
And when you lay all the updates from the specific brief out on a table, a really stark picture emerges. We're tracking this massive collision between like three huge forces.
Okay, let's unpack this, because on one hand, we're witnessing these unprecedented, godlike, planetary-scale AI capabilities coming online. But on the other hand, we're looking at incredibly fragile physical supply chains that threaten to just bottleneck that entire expansion.
Yeah, a massive physical choke point.
And then, running parallel to all of that, there's a shocking, sweeping rollback of digital privacy affecting basically everyone. It's a lot to process.
It's a ton.
So let's start at the macro level, because AI is no longer just, a chatbot you use to rewrite an angry email.
No, not at all. The capabilities have scaled to the point where these systems are actively modeling the physical Earth. Like, the brief highlights a new initiative from Google Research called Ground Source.
Right, saw that.
Yeah, they're using their Gemini multimodal language models to ingest and parse over 5 million unstructured news
And
reports.
they're taking those 5 million messy reports and turning them into a structured data set of, I think it was over 2.6 million individual flood events.
Across 150 countries, yeah.
Yeah, which is wild. And this is what enables 24-hour flash flood forecasting globally. But for anyone listening who isn't a data scientist, why is parsing unstructured data such a massive breakthrough?
Well, what's fascinating here is that for decades, dealing with unstructured data has been one of the most, resource-intensive challenges in all of computing.
Because it's just messy, right?
Exactly. Imagine a local blog post about a flooded street in a small town in Indonesia, and then you compare that to an official meteorological bulletin from Brazil.
Right. Totally different things.
The formats are different, the languages are completely different, the context varies wildly. Traditional software requires rigid templates. It just cannot easily categorize that kind of chaos.
It would need a human to sit there, read the Indonesian blog, look the photo, figure out the severity, and manually type it into a spreadsheet.
Yeah, and doing that 5 million times, well, it's impossible.
Ugh.
But a multimodal LLM can read the text, analyze the images of the flooded streets, understand the geographic context, and then synthesize all of that public messy data into open benchmarks and clean formats.
It's like AI is graduating from being a really fast librarian to becoming a global nervous system.
That's a great way to put it. By doing this, Google is effectively using LLMs to build data infrastructure for under-instrumented domains.
Meaning, places that don't have expensive physical weather sensors.
Correct. The software compensates for a lack of physical hardware. And in this case, it translates directly into flash flood warnings that can literally save lives.
It's taking the cognitive heavy lifting of thousands of human analysts and just executing it instantly. But, as the scale of these models grows, the stakes change.
Definitely.
The brief notes that on the exact same day, Anthropic announced the Anthropic Institute. They brought in Jack Clark as the head of public benefit, and they're building this interdisciplinary team.
Yeah, it's not just machine learning engineers anymore.
Right. They're specifically hiring economists and social scientists to research the societal impacts of AI. And their stated goal is to tell the world what we are seeing from inside a frontier lab.
The tech industry is finally realizing that deploying technology that fundamentally alters global economics is no longer just a math problem.
Yeah.
If your model can instantly parse global data, or write code, or automate complex analysis, you need economists to brace for the resulting labor market fallout just as much as you need engineers to optimize the neural network.
Okay, I have to push back on this, though. Because if these models are now powerful enough to predict global natural disasters and disrupt entire economies, who is actually monitoring the monitors?
That's the core tension, isn't it?
Right, because we saw social media companies hire social scientists in the 2010s to monitor the impact of the news feed. We know how that turned out. the core product still optimized for engagement above all else.
Yeah, the historical parallel there is very valid.
So is an internal institute at Anthropic enough to protect us when they're fundamentally a corporation racing to build the most powerful model possible?
Well, what you're identifying is the inherent tension of self-regulation. Anthropic is creating a mechanism to acknowledge the externalities of their product, which is a proactive step.
Yeah.
But as you said, an internal institute still operates within the walls of a company driven by market incentives. They're offering transparency, but structurally, they are both driving the car and attempting to police the speed limit at the same time.
And they are driving incredibly fast. But this brings us to that Ferrari and engine coolant analogy from earlier.
Right, the physical limitations.
Because while we talk about AI like it's this infinite magic happening in the cloud is actually made of physical servers sitting in massive warehouses. And those servers are suddenly facing a catastrophic physical bottleneck.
The physical reality check.
Exactly. Yeah. According to the brief, Qatar's helium production has completely halted due to issues with their liquid natural gas facilities.
Yeah, and this is huge.
It's a massive bottleneck because the global semiconductor manufacturing industry, the fabs that build the chips running these AI models, they currently have only a 2-week buffer stock of helium. 2 weeks.
It's a razor thin margin.
Why is helium the choke point here? Like, you can't just pump cold water or air over them?
No, no. Water or air would introduce impurities or just fail to transfer the heat fast enough, which would instantly destroy the microscopic components.
Oh, wow.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, you have to look at how a microchip is physically made. It operates at microscopic scales, creating transistors measured in nanometers.
Right. They're impossibly small.
And the chemical and physical processes to etch those transistors generate immense concentrated heat. Helium is an inert gas with incredibly high thermal conductivity. It is absolutely essential for the cooling systems in these fabrication plants.
So without a steady supply of helium, the machines just melt down.
Essentially, yes. If the fabs shut down, chip production stops. If chip production stops, the entire expansion of the AI industry hits a hard physical wall.
Which perfectly explains the sudden manic shift we're seeing on the software side of today's brief. Hardware is suddenly finite, so software developers are being forced into extreme optimization.
Efficiency is no longer a luxury. It's a survival tactic.
Yeah, so I have to ask, is all this extreme software optimization, like Microsoft pushing one-bit LLMs and context gateway compressing inputs, is it just a desperate reaction to these looming hardware and physical resource scarcities?
It absolutely is. I mean, look at Microsoft's BitNet trending with 33,000 stars on GitHub. It's an official framework for one-bit LLMs.
How does an AI model even function on one bit?
Well, the standard approach for the last few years has been brute force, right? Throw more power, more chips at the problem. A traditional LLM uses 16-bit floating point numbers to represent its parameters.
Which are basically very complex decimals.
Exactly. BitNet strips that complexity down to ternary values.
Ternary meaning just three options.
Yes. -1, 0, and 1. It's a fundamental rethink. Instead of nuanced decimal calculations, the network is forced to make stark binary style choices.
That sounds crazy.
It is, but by reducing the math to essentially one bit, you drastically reduce the memory and energy required to run the model while maintaining a surprising level of performance.
And we're also seeing that new tool called context gateway trending, which basically compresses the context an AI agent uses before it even hits the LLM APIs to reduce costs.
Right, because every token processed requires memory and energy. If you intelligently compress the prompt before the model processes it, you're bypassing the physical limitations of the servers.
And this extreme push is yielding some staggering results. The brief mentions a local user on Reddit who took an RTX 5090 GPU.
A consumer graphics card.
Right, a card you buy for a desktop PC.
Yeah.
And they hit an insane 2,000 tokens per second using the QN 3.5 27 billion parameter model for document classification.
2,000 tokens a second is roughly the equivalent of reading an entire novel in a couple of minutes.
And they did it local.
Yeah, and the specs of how they did it are telling. They loaded no vision capabilities, maxed out 128K context window, and used a batch size of 8.
So for you listening who might not build models at home, 128K context window means the AI can hold the equivalent of a whole book in its short-term memory.
Right.
And a batch size of 8 means it's juggling 8 separate streams of thought simultaneously. To push 2,000 tokens a second while juggling that much data on a consumer card means they have hacked away every single piece of bloat.
Exactly. And what's truly significant is that it wasn't accomplished by a massive corporation inside a billion-dollar data center. It was done by an individual hobbyist.
So driven by these hardware constraints, the power is moving away from massive corporate data centers directly into the hands of grassroots developers. It's like the ultimate DIY tech movement.
Oh, absolutely.
People are taking these godlike tools and building their own backyard AI sandboxes. The Breeze is full of this stuff. There's a clean UI tool called CannyRun.ai that hit the Hacker News front page.
738 points, yeah.
Yeah, helping the local Lemma community check if their specific local hardware can run certain models. Then you have NanoClaw, a container startup that went from a side project to a Docker acquisition after just a six-week sprint.
A six-week turnaround just shows the immense financial momentum behind developer-focused tools right now.
And TUI Studio is gaining traction, giving developers a browser-based visual terminal UI prototyping tool. But looking at all this brings up a massive contradiction.
How so?
Well, earlier we talked about Anthropic hiring social scientists to ensure powerful AI is safe, right?
Right.
Doesn't a wildly popular tool like Heretic, which The Brief notes gained 1,162 stars in a single day for fully automatic censorship removal, doesn't that completely bypass all those billions of dollars in safety research?
That's the inherent tension we're seeing right now.
It just strips away the safety rails.
Right. And the popularity of Heretic really illustrates the unavoidable friction between centralized labs focused on safety and the open source community's desire for total autonomy.
Because if a developer is trying to write a gritty sci-fi script, or analyze a complex cybersecurity vulnerability, a corporate API might just refuse the prompt.
Exactly, because it triggers a broad safety policy. Major labs view strict guardrails as a necessary societal protection. But for the open source community, those same guardrails manifest as overly restrictive censorship.
Yeah.
The demand for uncensored models isn't necessarily about a desire to do malicious things. It's a reflection of the developer community's demand for unrestricted access. They want the raw engine.
Without the speed governor.
Precisely. And while the debate over safety versus freedom is complex, the data from today's brief is clear. Developers want absolute sovereignty over their compute.
Sovereign. Okay, but here is a really dark irony.
Oh.
It feels like we're building an impenetrable, highly optimized fortress for our local AI models, but we're leaving the front door wide open on our personal communications and government infrastructure.
Ah, privacy collapse.
Because while tech enthusiasts are fighting for total control, the average user's control over their own personal data is collapsing on a global scale.
The divergence is stark, yes. As tools for local autonomy become more powerful, our centralized personal data is becoming increasingly exposed.
Let's look at Meta. According to The Brief, on May 8, 2026, Meta is officially killing end-to-end encryption for Instagram direct messages,
A massive privacy rollback.
affecting millions. And just to be clear on the mechanics, end-to-end encryption means only the sender and the receiver possess the keys to read the messages. Meta themselves cannot read them.
Right.
By rolling that back, they're essentially taking the locks off the doors of private communications. With Instagram actively rolling back privacy, Sweden's government code leaking, and the NSA secretly expanding surveillance. Are we just looking at bad luck, or is there a coordinated systemic shift away from digital privacy?
This raises an important question about the broader context of regulatory pressures and the fragility of centralized
Yeah,
systems.
break that down for us.
Well, with Instagram, platforms at meta scale are caught in a tug of war. Users want absolute privacy, but governments increasingly pressure these companies to provide access to communications, to moderate content, or combat illegal activities.
So dropping end-to-end encryption is a capitulation.
Generally, yes. They're prioritizing compliance over the absolute privacy of the user. But it's not just corporate platforms, it's also governments failing to protect data.
The Swedish e-government source code.
Exactly. The full code base from the compromised CGI Spherage infrastructure is now circulating on the dark web, affecting vital government services.
Which is wild.
It perfectly illustrates the fragility of centralized systems. If a developer's local RTX 5090 goes offline, it impacts one person. If a central government node is compromised, it leaks the data of millions.
And then there's the national security aspect. Senator Wyden is actively sounding the alarm on NSA Section 702 abuses.
Right. Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act is intended to allow the government to collect the communications of non-Americans located abroad.
But the reality is different.
Senator Wyden has consistently warned that American communications are routinely swept up in this massive data collection without a warrant.
He's warning that Americans will be stunned by upcoming revelations about warrantless surveillance, right as privacy advocates are pushing for warrant requirements during these renewal debates.
It's a systemic trend. The sheer appetite for data, whether for corporate moderation, running national government services, or expanding surveillance, is consistently overriding the mechanisms designed to protect individual privacy.
Okay, let's take a breath and look at the massive terrain we just covered today. We started with Gemini parsing millions of unstructured global news reports to predict floods.
Right.
Then we saw that AI is hitting a hard physical wall with the 2-week ticking clock on global helium supplies, which is forcing developers into extreme optimization with tools like BitNet.
A 1-bit LLMs.
Yeah, and that optimization sparked this massive boom in grassroots, uncensored, completely local AI tools. And finally, we ended on this jarring reality check that our digital privacy across the board is systematically collapsing.
You know, hearing you lay all those points out sequentially actually brings up a rather chilling connection to the very first thing we discussed today.
Hey, the flood predictions.
Yeah. Think about the underlying mechanism of Google's ground source. It proved that AI can achieve incredible things by vacuuming up millions of pieces of messy, unstructured public data and finding the patterns within them.
Okay.
Now consider the massive privacy rollbacks we just walked through, the end of Instagram's E2E encryption, the leaking of major government databases, the NSA's warrantless surveillance.
Oh, wow.
If AI's greatest superpower is finding patterns in vast oceans of unstructured data, are we rapidly approaching a future where our exposed, unencrypted personal lives simply become the next batch of unstructured data?
So it's training data.
Exactly. Are these incredibly powerful models going to be used to track and predict us with the exact same efficiency they used to track the floods?
That is a thought that is going to stick with me.
Yeah.
We are building the ultimate prediction machines right at the exact moment we're handing over all the unencrypted data they need to predict us.
It's something to think about.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep your eyes open, keep protecting your data, and most importantly, keep questioning the tech around you. Catch you next time.